Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to another jam-packed episode of The New World next week, which, of course, you can find high-quality, low-quality audio, video, all the sources cited, all that and so much more on NewWorldNextWeek.com. And, James, you would think, or at least here in the West, that the biggest story going on in the world right now is Lance Armstrong and his doping charges. We are here to be a sort of antidote to that, and we are non-corporate funded. We are non-commercial. We've always been that way. There is no other influence exerted over New World Next Week other than, James, you and I kind of sussing out which stories we want to address each week. So we'll begin with a story on VoltaireNet.org, and it comes from Thierry Maison. NATO preparing vast disinformation campaign. In a few days, as perhaps as early as this Friday, June 15th, 2012, at noon, the Syrians who want to watch their national TV stations will see them replaced on their screens by TV programs created by the Central Intelligence Agency. Studio-shot images will show massacres that are blamed on the Syrian government, people demonstrating, ministers and generals resigning from their post, President Assad fleeing, the rebels gathering in the big city centers, and a new government installing itself in the presidential palace. This operation of disinformation, directly managed from Washington by Ben Rhodes, the U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategic Communication, aims at demoralizing the Syrians in order to pave the way for a coup d'etat. NATO, discontent about the double veto of Russia and China, the panda and bear we mentioned on last week's episode, James, NATO will thus succeed in conquering Syria without attacking the country illegally. Whichever judgment you might have formed on the actual events in Syria, a coup d'etat will end all hopes of democratization. The Arab League has officially asked the satellite operators Arabsat and Nilesat to stop broadcasting Syrian media, either public or private. A precedent already exists because the Arab League had managed to censure Libyan TV in order to keep the leaders of Jamahiriya from communicating with their people. There is no Hertz frequency network in Syria where TV works exclusively with satellites. The cut, however, James, will not leave the screens black.
No, it will not. Well, an interesting story, and one that, like every other story, I suggest people reserve their skepticism about. Obviously, this is dealing about something that is a possible event in the future, but it's certainly one worth taking into account because Thierry Maison is, of course, he's been living and working in that area for several years now. He was in Libya during that siege, and he's been traveling to and working in and around Syria for quite a while now. So I know he does have sources there. And certainly it is an interesting story because it does name people by name, Ben Rhodes and Bandar Bush and others, specifically named in that article as being complicit in this plot. So there is enough detail there that it is something that we have to take seriously. And certainly as he goes on to outline in that article, it's not an idea that's completely off the wall. In fact, it's something that we've seen several times in the past. And he writes, for example, about Venezuela in 2002, when the U.S. staged that military coup against Chavez, and that was backed up by several TV stations that were reporting on these protesters that had gathered to try to oust Chavez. But in reality, of course, it was not a protest movement at all. It was completely a military coup, so that was a completely TV-staged event. We saw similar things going on in Libya last year with protesters supposedly amassing in Green Square in Tripoli, but in fact they weren't there. They hadn't even captured the city yet. So we've seen this used as a ploy enough in the past that it's not altogether unthinkable to think that it'll be used against Syria, especially now at this juncture as things are heating up again in Syria, as Hillary Clinton is pointing out against the perfectly legal practice of the Russian government of selling attack helicopters to Assad, but they're giving not talking about the millions of dollars that the U.S. has been illegally pumping into the Syrian opposition for years now, unbeknownst to the American public. So things are definitely heating up in Syria again, and it is coming to a head, and we could definitely see some kind of tactic like this used once again to try to trick and fool the public into going along with a war agenda. So it's something we have to keep our eyes on. And also, of course, the continuing complete the exposure of the Hula hoax, which is being ripped apart to shreds by German newspapers and other observers around the world. Globalresearch.ca has a number of articles right now on the front page about Hula and the lie that's being used as this, again, to try to whip the public into wartime frenzy. So I suggest people check that out and continue to try to expose all of the lies that are taking place against Syria right now as we head into another period of immense destabilization and potential war.
And we, of course, here in the States, we practiced our presidential emergency alerts over all our television and radio stations. So an event like this is not far-fetched by any stretch. Just remains to be seen whether it's going to take place kind of on a small television screen or if it's going to take place in the sky, basically, as many world events kind of seem to be coming to a head all around. James, our second story comes from Glenn Greenwald, and it's on Salon.com. Obama redefines militant, and the media eats it up. Now, among so many other things, Glenn Greenwald points out, of course, that whenever our drones, of course, put forth by, you know, the Nobel Peace Prize winning Barry Satoru, every time it ends the life of a Muslim, all the corporate controlled media are all about reporting it being, oh, well, they're militants. He gets into a recent lengthy and detailed article in the New York Times about Obama's counterterrorism policies based on interviews with 36 of his current and former advisors. This as opposed to the TV stations always, you know, citing, you know, unnamed officials. The article explains that Obama's rhetorical emphasis on avoiding civilian deaths did not significantly change the drone program because Obama himself simply expanded the definition of a militant. So let's get this quote from the New York Times, James. Quote, Mr. Obama embraced a disputed method for counting civilian casualties that did little to box him in. It, in effect, counts all military-age males in a strike zone as combatants, according to several administration officials, unless there's explicit intelligence, posthumously proving them innocent. So, James, you know, if they're getting hit by our missiles, well, gosh, they must have been a bad guy, right?
Oh, of course that's how it works. Well, that is how it works in the political calculus, and how disgusting is it? I mean, what sadder indictment of a society can there be that they go to this length to justify the wanton killing of innocent civilians? And that's all this amounts to when the bombs drop on weddings and funeral processions or whatever it may be that obviously have nothing to do with militants. They get to be declared militants simply because they were of the right age and in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I think when the history books are written generations hence, people are not going to be looking back kindly on the American public of 2012 that just allowed this to take place, as if they were the good guys in any and all things, and any person who gets touched by their weapons of warfare must themselves inherently be bad. It's almost like an article of faith. Anyone who's killed by the Americans has to be bad by definition. And it is just disgusting. And this is the type of thing that leads, well, a lot of the rest of the world to really find total disgust with the warmongers. And of course, it is just the warmongers who are in charge of the American system who are to blame for this. But of course, the American public gets lumped in with that in the eyes of so many. So it is something that people have to stand up and speak out on. And I know that you and I, and I imagine most of the people watching this, understand just how disgusting this is. But there's another part of this political calculus that was raised by Eric Dreitzer of StopImperialism.com in a recent interview on the Boiling Frogs Post podcast, where he pointed out that the part of the function of this type of leak itself is to actually boost Obama up in the eyes of the warmongers of the right. Oh, look, Obama's as good a warmonger as anyone. He can also do these types of disgusting things to make sure that the perpetuation of the war on terror, the mythical war of terror, continues forever. Because anyone we kill will just automatically become a militant or a terrorist or whatever we deem them. So this boosts him in the eyes of the right in that phony left-right paradigm. And it's all part of that political calculus, which makes this even more disgusting, that it's all just a game and a show to try to lure people in and to get the zombies on his side. And unfortunately, this is how it works, unless we stand up and speak out about this and point out just how disgusting it really is.
Watch out there. Don't say the Z word. But yes, we see from this administration, so the leaks concerning the info to Kathryn Bigelow making the Osama movie so they can have the official Osama myth, or the leaks about Obama being essentially behind the push for Stuxnet and Flame. And maybe this gives him a little more cachet. And maybe really, I don't know, in a way the tide seems to have shifted in some way, that the possibility of a Romney presidency doesn't seem that far-fetched. And, of course, you know, Brzezinski has created another, you know, one-term Democrat president who, you know, presided over the, of course, engineered malaise. And, of course, James, we'll see in the presidential selections, in the emotional con game, some of the folks that you think that, you know, you should maybe put your faith in, they're going to end up endorsing some of the main horses in the main controlled race. James, any note on that?
A veiled illusion, but I think everyone knows what you're talking about there. And you're right, there's a lot of political backdoor shenanigans going on right now. Surprise, surprise. So unfortunately, yes, we have to keep ever vigilant of that. And unfortunately, even the leaks themselves are becoming this part of this greater political game. With the leaks now, there's going to be a special investigator into the leaks. And oh, this is, might bring down Obama. And it ties in with Romney at Bilderberg 2012, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't know exactly how this is going to play out, but it doesn't really matter, because choosing between Obama and Romney is like choosing whether you want to eat a pile of barf or eat a pile of diarrhea. Personally, I'm not going to eat either, so I humbly suggest to other people out there that they also come to that conclusion for themselves, but who am I to tell them what to vote?
James, our third and final story this week perhaps sets us up, and again, we'll remind folks that every Thursday night on Corbett Report Radio on republicbroadcasting.org, we do foodworldorder.com episodes. So with a nod towards food, health, and the environment, you have an original, exclusive new report that you wrote that's up on your own FukushimaUpdate.com. More reports emerge regarding Fukushima cover-ups, James.
That's right. Let me just read the opening to this. It says, two new reports have emerged this week from the Japanese government demonstrating how government agencies hid data from the public in the wake of the Fukushima nuclear crisis and how they misrepresented the effects of that crisis. On Monday, NHK obtained a draft report from the Japanese Science Ministry about the government's response, including how data from the System for Prediction of Environmental Emergency Dose Information was deliberately kept from the public. The SPEEDI system was used to forecast radiation fallouts and was later proven to be accurate in its predictions, but even though the Japanese media was asking for the data from the onset of the disaster on March 11th, the government refused to provide it until April 25th. It also goes on to say, meanwhile, the Education Ministry has released a similar report assessing its own response to the crisis, and it addresses its decision in April of 2011 to set the maximum radiation exposure level for outdoor school activities to 20 millisieverts per year at the extreme upper end of the ICRP's recommendations for exposures in post-emergency situations. I'll let you to continue reading that on your own, but suffice it to say, the reports just basically go to confirm what we already know, that the government has been hiding data and misrepresenting data to the public since the very beginning, and here they are coming out a year later saying, oh, we're sorry about that, it won't happen again. And basically you can trust it as far as you can throw it, which is not very far at all.
Well, and we can just pull a popular quote from popular culture that, you know, maybe when they tell you not to panic is probably when you should panic. James, if we can just wrap this up in a simple kind of soundbite summary. So it seems from our three stories that they're redefining what is dangerous radiation. They're redefining what it means to be a terrorist or a militant. And they're even redefining what you see on your TV as your reality. So just as we see on all these different levels that we always tell folks, don't take our word for any of this. You know, we do this with our hearts. We're not corporate. We're not funded. No one's telling us what to talk about, James, other than you and I kind of working out what stories we want to cover. We see this game.
That's right. And if there's a hopeful message to this as well, it's that that there is, the truth will eventually be exposed by, you know, one form or another. So we have to be out there harping on it when we see it. But we're completely out of time. James, I want to thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to talking to you on Corbett Report Radio tonight.
All right. Take care.